His deep-set eyes wore a worried, hunted look, and he glanced furtively around the room, as if searching for a hidden something which might unexpectedly pounce upon him. His face was haggard and colorless. The corners of his mouth twitched spasmodically. "What's the matter, old man? You look as if you'd seen a ghost. Brace up." I crossed to the buffet and poured a small glass of wine from the decanter. "Drink this." He downed it with a hasty gulp and took to toying with his hat again.
"Thanks, Prig. I don't feel quite myself tonight."
"You don't look it either. What's wrong?" Malcolm Bruce shifted uneasily in his chair. I eyed him in silence for a moment, wondering what could possibly affect the man so strongly. I knew Bruce as a man of steady nerves and iron will. To find him so visibly upset was in itself unusual. I passed cigars, and he selected one automatically. It was not until the second cigar had been lighted that Bruce broke the silence. His nervousness was apparently gone. Once more, he was the dominant, self-reliant figure I knew of old.
"Prig,"
he began,
"I've just been through the most devilish, gruesome experience that ever befell a man. I don't know whether I dare tell it or not, for fear you'll think I've gone crazy. And I wouldn't blame you if you did, but it's true, every word of it."
He paused dramatically and blew a few rings of smoke in the air. I smiled. Many a weird tale I had listened to over that selfsame table. There must have been some kink in my personality that inspired confidence, for I had been told stories that some men would have given years of their life to have heard. And yet, despite my love of the bizarre and the dangerous, and my longing to explore for reaches of little-known lands, I had been doomed to a life of prosaic, flat, uneventful business.
"Do you happen to have heard of Professor Van Alistair?"
asked Bruce. "You don't mean Arthur Van Alistair?"
"The same. Then you know him."
"I should say so. Known him for years. Ever since he resigned as professor of chemistry at the college, so he could have more time for his experiments. Why, I even helped him choose the plans for that soundproof laboratory of his on the top floor of his home. Then he got so busy with his co-founded experiments, he couldn't find the time to be chummy."
"You may recall, Prig, that when we were in college together, I used to dabble quite a bit in chemistry."
I nodded, and Bruce continued.
"About 4 months ago, I found myself out of a job. Van Alistair advertised for an assistant, and I answered. He remembered me from college days, and I managed to convince him I knew enough about chemistry to warrant a trial. He had a young lady doing his secretarial work, a Miss Marjorie Purdy. She was one of these strict attention to business types, and as good looking as she was efficient. She had been helping Van Alistair a bit in his laboratory, and I soon discovered she took a genuine interest in puttering around, making experiments of her own. Indeed, she spent nearly all her spare time with us in the laboratory. It was only natural that such companionship should result in a close friendship, and it wasn't long before I began to depend on her to help me in difficult experiments when the professor was busy. I never could seem to stump her. That girl took to chemistry as a duck takes to water. About 2 months ago, Van Alistair had the laboratory partitioned off, and he made a separate workroom for himself. He told us that he was about to enter upon a series of experiments, which, if successful, would bring him everlasting fame. He flatly refused to make us his confidants in any way, shape, or manner. From that time on, Miss Purdy and I were left alone more and more. For days at a time, the professor would retire to the seclusion of his new workshop. Sometimes